Just kind of take me through your day when that whole game finally got here. You guys were finally in the postseason. What was that moment like for that front office that built this operation?
Well, it was really like, and it was, you know, the day after the Chiefs and the Patriots had played at Arrowhead the night before. So there was just so much buzz around the city leading into the day. But it was really a culmination of the work that had been put in to get to that day. You know, the Shields and Davis deal that took place in 2012, going into 2013 and us really believing that, you know, we had a really good shot to make the playoffs in 13. We were three out with seven to play, go out to Seattle, don't get it done. And then moving into the 14 season, you know, things were kind of like, you know, not really going great. You know, we'd lost quite a few games going into the All-Star break and coming out. And probably one of the bigger things that we did was on June 30th, we traded for Raul Ibanez, or we signed Raul Ibanez. I was actually meeting the Angels general manager, Jerry Poto, for lunch. And he had released him that morning, and we got on the phone with Dayton, and we immediately signed him. And it proved to be such a big part of not only 2014 but 2015, because Raul kind of took the young guys under his wings and made them believe that this team could win. And we were kind of, you know, puttering along in 2014, and Raul called a team meeting in Chicago. And like Scott Downs and Raul Ibanez just let the team know that you guys are way better than what you're playing, and you are a feared team from the other dugout. And from that point forward, I think the team went on like a 22-5 run, and you really started to feel the momentum. And so you get to that morning, that day, and the anxiousness of the game, and knowing that, you know, we haven't been here in a long time, and so to be down like we were so late in the game, all the intangibles kind of just came out of everything that we had tried to build the team and the organization around for so many years. Everything came out in the later part of that game when we were down those runs, and just an incredible.
How much does that speech by Raul Ibanez matter on the night of the wild card game, down 7-3 in the sixth inning or whatever it was?
I think it was incredible, because when you look at Raul Ibanez and Jason Nix and Scott Downs and Jason Frazier and Josh Willingham, five veteran, really like marginal players, more role players than impactful players on a, at the time, 25-man roster. It was the day-to-day Jason Nix teaching Mike Moustakas how to work, and Raul Ibanez teaching, you know, Eric Hosmer how to win, and Downs and Frazier and Willingham, and just their winning attitudes. It speaks to how, you know, the environment and what guys bring to the table, you know, it sometimes lends more to their ability on the field, and that was certainly the case. And Raul, I'll take it one step further. You know, we fall short in Game 7 in 2014. We all fly out to Seattle to give Raul Ibanez his ring. And Raul, you know, as he's speaking to the team, says, guys, this is wonderful, this is great, but I hate to tell you, you're not done yet, and you guys can win the World Series. And it was just intangible push by a veteran guy that made every player believe that we could achieve anything.
Bob asked you what you did the morning of. I want to know what you did the morning or the evening after all that sort of excitement is over with. Like, what did Gene Watson do that evening?
Oh my gosh, I don't even remember. It was so exciting. I remember being with my assistant behind home plate and my daughter behind home plate, and just the celebration. And if you ask around, I was the one front office guy that really got in there and celebrated and had a lot of fun. And so I just know, you know, we were getting on a plane to Anaheim with great momentum, and just, you know, the ride of a lifetime for the next, you know, a year and a half.
I think the question, though, that everybody wants the answer to is, why the hell did you steal my blue jacket and try to claim it was your own?
Yeah, I don't know about that, Bob. That blue jacket thing kind of just hit me one day at a Kohl's. You know what? I'm actually going to give you credit, because I do believe that you were wearing it first, and like in many things, I try to emulate you as much as possible.
Thank you very much. So this team's trailing 7-3. Yordano's pitching. The up and down emotions of that game. What was your emotional roller coaster like, being, you know, one of the assistant general managers at the time of this organization? What was your emotional roller coaster like watching this thing?
You know, to be honest with you, man, when you're down that late by that much, your mind begins to go into, okay, you know, what's next? You know, what are we going to have meetings? You know, what's this even going to look like? You know, what's going to happen? Because we had put so much from the minute we made the Shields and Davis deal to all the transactions, the Johnny Cueto's, the Edison Volquez's, the Chris Young's, all the deals that we had made. And to come up short in this one game was just going to be a real devastating thing for the organization, and really not knowing what's next. You know, what's going to happen? And you begin to go into a mode of, okay, you know, we're going to have to get to the folly. We're going to have meetings with our scouts to talk about, you know, what we're going to do. And just to know that, you know, Rusty Kuntz and the plan that he had, knowing that John Lester had not thrown over to first base, was not going to throw over to first base, and just to put the game in motion in the way that he did and to get us back into that ball game. You know, Mike Moustakas, I don't know if many people know that Mike Moustakas, you know, came off the field in the dugout and basically challenged the entire dugout that we are not losing this game tonight. So it was kind of a culmination of that first wave of Billy and Gordo and Luke Hochschafer and Zach Greinke through that 06 to 010 group, and then, you know, Haas and Moose and all that next group kind of blending, Gordo, that next group kind of blending together. It was kind of like all the winning that they had done in the minor leagues, all the winning they had done with Team USA was all one, came to one culmination, one moment in time, down 7-3 to John Lester, where they just said, we're not going to quit. We're not going to lose this game. And it just really set the tempo for what was just an amazing ride.
When you watch that final, you know, play where Salvador Perez hits the ball down the left field line and the ball's about 18 feet outside, and everybody gave Sal, you know, so much business all year about how he doesn't swing at strikes, it doesn't really matter at that point. You know, what's your initial reaction as you say you're sitting behind home plate? Like, is it just like a proud dad moment to watch these guys finally win a playoff game in so long? Or is it just like a, yeah, now what's next? Let's move on.
More disbelief than anything. I mean, it just to know the pitcher that John Lester was at the time, and to be able to come back and just like the insurmountable odds of coming back and winning that game. And I will never forget, like, ever forget the fans in the stadium. I got goosebumps right now talking about it. The fans in the stadium that night and the energy. And, you know, I've been to four World Series. I've been a part of a lot of big things in the game. But that night, the stadium and the fans and to just never give in, just the will to push that team to win and to see that ball go down the left field line was just one. I still watch the videos all the time of it with me and my daughter, and it was just one amazing moment in time. But it moved so fast, like we're on the plane to L.A. and we're playing the best team in the American League, like so fast. And, you know, I hear stories of the Angels when we rolled into L.A., when we come off the bus the first day and you know, having worked for the Angels in 2021, stories from their veteran players saying, when y'all came off the bus, we knew we were in trouble. And that was just an edge that, you know, Ned Yost and Del Swaim and Don Wakamatsu, Pedro Grifol, Rusty Kuntz, you know, they brought Dave Island. They brought such an edge as a coaching staff to that clubhouse every day. And if you guys remember, we were fighting with every team. It seemed like once a week we were having a fight with a team. We're having to park the buses in a different part of the stadium to leave. I mean, it was really a team that played with great edge and great energy, and when they walked off the bus, you better pack a lunch to play them.
I look at this, Gene, as a game that really changed the face of the organization. If you lose, you don't know if 2015 even happens, right? You don't know what you know what's in store. What do you think happens if you guys end up losing that wild card game?
You know, I don't know. I know, you know, Billy was going to be gone. Shields was going to be gone. Gordo was a free agent, you know, and even, you know, getting, you know, the day after game seven, you know, you don't get to what I consider one of the more historical moments in the organization's time, you know, like you don't know. You just don't know what the mindset of ownership is going to be and recommitting dollars, you know, to Alex Gordon and to be able to, you know, make a trade for a Johnny Cueto. You know, you just don't know what the mindset's going to be if you lose that game, because it's just one game. And our mindset all along was to win a world championship in Kansas City. That was the mindset. But, you know, that winning that game gets you on the roll, and the momentum of that city that we had gets you to a game seven. And the morning after we lose game seven, Dayton Moore, you know, bringing in all the major league free agents and saying, okay, where are we going to win? And that's the moment I knew in 15 we were going to win the World Series, was that constant push. And if you lose that wild card game, I don't know that you still get the same push. You know, even free agents coming to Kansas City, I don't know that you get that same momentum if you just get that one game and you lose it, as to the story that was written from the moment that Salvi put that ball in the left field corner to the Salvi popping up to Pablo Sandoval in game seven. I don't think even that 2-week momentum carried us through to 2015 in a lot of ways.
Was that wild card game the greatest baseball game you've ever been a part of?
It's not even close. It's not even close. 35 years to the day, it's not even close.
I mean, I'm looking at my leg right now, the goosebumps when you're talking about it, because it's 10 years. It's gone by in a blur, Gene, as we all know. It also feels like it was, you know, just yesterday, and we were all getting there for that game and getting excited, wondering if we're in the postseason. And we talked to Ned, and he goes, nah, it doesn't count. You know, it doesn't count. If you don't win the wild card game, it didn't count that we were in the postseason. Was that the attitude that everybody had?
100%. And I mean, and when you make the commitment, you know, we'd won like 72 games in 2012, and you make the Shields and Davis deal, which was one of the more controversial trades, you know, made in baseball at the time, and then you fall short in 13. You fall short in 14, and our mindset was never to just get in the playoffs. Our mindset was to win a world championship, because over the course of history, you know, when you talk about competition over process and finance, you play to win world championships. And ultimately, that's what you will be remembered for. And that was our goal from the minute we got to Kansas City in 2006. And so just that one night, that one game, really so many intangible ways set the tone for us to continue to push to get us there in player acquisition, in our processes, in the employees we were bringing in the way we approached, you know, our players with our fans. And I've never seen a city that had a connection with the players, even to today, like Kansas City does. It's just such a special place for players and fans. It's such a unique, kind of a small town vibe where, you know, the fans have so much access to the players. And just the stories behind the scenes, you know, the power and light parties where the players are paying all the bar tabs, and you know, they'd go to a restaurant and they'd leave waitresses tickets to the games, and they'd stop by and visit elderly fans that could. There's just so many great stories that come from that season that just ultimately define what the organization ended up being in 2015.
Cool. Thank you, Gene. We appreciate the time.
Okay, guys, take care. Thanks so much.